With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Welcome to the Lucky Letcord Podcast, a Tennis Now production sponsored by Tennis Express and a proud member of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I'm your host, Chris Otto, happy to be with you. It's Monday. It's January 9th. Aussie Open qualifying is underway, and the Australian Open will begin next Monday. We're here to talk about that. We're here to talk about the first 10 days of the tennis season. Richard Pagliaro, my trusty friend and editor at tennisnow.com, is here to give me his takes on what he saw in the first week of the season, which was pretty eventful. Novak Djokovic got his 92nd title. The United Cup was won by the United States. We saw great performances from Coco Gauff, Jessica Pegula, Aryna Sabalenka, a teenager named Linda Noskova. A lot of good stuff happening, and we're all ready to fire it up down under in Melbourne for the Australian Open. Djokovic and Iga Swiatek, the favorites, but a lot of storylines as we head in to the Happy Slam. So why don't we talk about it? Why don't we try to break down the first 10 days of the season? Why don't we do that right now? Hey, Richard. Nice to have you back. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Chris. Excited for another new season and a lot to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, this is our first get-together of the season, and as you said, lots to talk about. Australian Open, I glance over at my calendar here, Monday the 16th in the States, which will be the 16th in Australia, the 15th here, less than 7 days, qualies are underway, storylines are in effect. I think we owe it to ourselves to start with the biggest storyline, which is Novak Djokovic being back in Australia, increasing his win streak on that continent to 34 consecutive wins, winning his 92nd title at Adelaide. Nice to see him appear at a 250 level event. Nice to see him play well and to pull another Houdini in the final, saving a match point to defeat Sebastian Korda. Where do we start with Novak? Heavy favorite heading into Melbourne, right?
Yeah, I would say heavy favorite. And also, to me, a good thing about Adelaide was the crowd that they really interacted well. The crowd was with him. It was an exciting match that he played. And, he responded well, and he said all the right things, too. So that was the one thing I was concerned about. How are the people going to respond to him? And I thought he got a great response. And he played some super exciting tennis. And as you referenced the match point, I mean, he saved a beautiful going backwards to hit that smash. And his smash is maybe, you know, not his best shot, but that was a phenomenal final. And also, I think Sebastian Korda can take a lot out of that final and a lot out of that tournament. He showed the level he has, and maybe he slipped off the radar a little bit last year because he didn't have quite the season a lot of people expected. But boy, he showed when he's firing on all cylinders, he's a dangerous player. He definitely could have won that match.
Yeah, even Novak had high praise for Sebastian Korda before the final. And, you know, it was a solid run, taking out Andy Murray, then the giant that is Roberto Bautista Agut in the second round. And we know RBA is really tough in January. That was the 6-4, 6-4 decisive win. Then he took out Jannik Sinner, who seemed to be struggling physically a bit. Then a nice win over Nishioka, who retired from the match.
Retired, right. But, and the Sinner match, he was down 5-4, I believe, in that before. Like you said, Sinner struggled a little, but then he just went on a roll. He blew right through him after that.
Yeah, but most impressive of it all, and I think you'd agree, is the way that he really matched strokes with Djokovic and was able to, you know, dictate for a lot of the match, had his chance to win it, didn't take it, and we know that, well, he came through that first set, but we can see like the scar tissue of the incident with Rafa at Indian Wells last year, where he struggled to close out and inevitably didn't close out a victory over Nadal that he maybe should have had. And I guess these experiences are really just formative for him, and he's building and he's growing. And he's always been the type of kid that does it at his own pace, that takes it in stride. And it was just a nice reminder that, yes, this guy is probably destined and or has at least a good shot to be number one American at some point. Of course, Taylor Fritz will have a lot to say about that, and so will Francis Tiafoe. But nice week, yeah, for Sebastian, for sure. It points to, you know, maybe a very nice Australian Open.
Yeah, and I can't get down on him the way he played that match. I mean, Novak came up big on that match point. Like you said, the Rafa match last year, I felt he didn't fully emotionally recover from that the rest of the year. And I think this match, it won't be the same because, to me, he was right there in the match. And then you look at the end when he got broken, it was almost like a brain cramp. I mean, even that game, he probably should have won, and then he just kind of lost. He missed a couple forehands, missed a forehand long on match point. But just to get back to the other point you raised was, I mean, Novak has one of the greatest two-handed backhands I've ever seen in my life, and this kid, Korda, was right there with him on the backhand wing going corner to corner. And Novak hit a lot more slice, I felt, at the end of that match, just trying to make Korda create something. So Novak played really smart, but to me, when you can stand in there on the backhand side with Novak Djokovic on a hard court, like you said, a guy who hasn't lost 34 matches in Australia, 21-match winning streak at the AO, that's really, really impressive.
Yeah, that was cool. And another thing, of course, I can't help but mention is Djokovic saving the match point. He's now done that to win a match 16 times. 8 of the times he's saved match points, he's gone on to win a tournament. It's, you know what's funny? I looked up some stats on the big three saving match points, and Djokovic doesn't ever waste match points, or he hasn't done it very often. Only 3 times has he lost when holding match points, and that compares to Federer, 24 losses, and Nadal, 8. So not only does he win a lot, 16 times and 8 titles, but he hardly ever drops the match points. This guy, he's pretty good under pressure.
Yeah, that's a great stat, because I think most people would say, if you had to guess, you would say Nadal would be the one of those three. But, I mean, look, the one a pivotal point in his career was that Wimbledon final when he saved the championship points against Federer. I'm not sure many people on the planet could do that against Roger Federer at Wimbledon on center court. He did it. And I think, you know, that's that. It just solidifies how dangerous he's going to be in Melbourne, because then you stretch it out, best of 5 sets, and he's so fit physically. He had time last year to really work on his body. And let's not forget, he's coming off that 6th ATP Finals title where he played great there, too. So he's trending really upward. It's his best tournament, his favorite court, Rod Laver Arena. He's on a roll. He's got the crowd behind. People should be excited to see him. It all looks really, really good for him right now.
Yeah, it does. And just to clarify, Nadal has saved match points 17 times and gone on to win, but he's had match point and lost 8 times. So, you know, all these guys are pretty incredible in the clutch. But Djokovic, I think you would definitely agree, he's done it more at the slams. You mentioned Wimbledon twice against Federer at the U.S. Open, back-to-back semifinals in 10 and 11. He's actually saved match points and won at the slams 5 times. And Rafa has, I could be wrong, and I need to really do a deep dive on this, but I don't think he's ever gone on to win a match at a slam where he's faced match point. And that's credit to him. He probably rarely faces match points, to be honest. Like, so anyway, they're all great, but Novak, it just has that something special. And yeah, and I think you're right. It's going to light a fire under him. It's going to give him an extra belief that he'll need. You mentioned him being fit. He did have the issue with the hamstring, which I thought was going to be a problem in the semis against Medvedev. Sure. And he was struggling with it and worried, and he got the tape on his leg, and he came back on Sunday in the final and looked just fine. So I guess that's nothing we really should be worried about. Am I right?
Well, he downplayed it in press afterwards, but you're right. I mean, that hamstring is a really important thing, especially someone who's as flexible, such a great mover, his legs are so important to his game as him. But, you know, just based on his comments, he did sound pretty confident. He's got some time to regroup, and then he's got the exhibition against Kyrgios, so that'll be exciting, and also a way to just reintroduce himself to the Rod Laver Arena fans.
Yeah, and I'm sure they'll be all for me. As you said, the crowds at Adelaide were just so intense, and it was great to see him get that reception. I think it was well-deserved, and I think he's going to get more.
I got to say, the Australian fans in general, they're just so so excited and exuberant, and they bring that intensity. Even, you know, the first year of United Cup where it was bouncing, you know, 3 different cities, you saw in Sydney where it wasn't their team, they're still into it. So I love the tennis in Australia because the people, they really get into it. And even Auckland, hey, we saw good crowds there despite all the rain and all the chaos. The fans came out there.
Yeah. It's always a highlight of the season for sure. They kick off with the Aussie summer. But we spoke quite a bit about Rafael Nadal, and you just mentioned the United Cup. Hasn't been going great for Rafa, really. 2 losses at the United Cup, 1 to Cam Nori, 1 to Alex de Minaur, both in 3 sets. I'll sum what I saw up briefly and let you take it from there. Struggling a little bit on serve, faced faced 13 break points against Demonor, faced 11 against Nori. There's some graphics out there, maybe some chatter that his toss is a little lower, that he might have had to adapt his serve since having that abdominal issue. I don't know if that's a real thing or not. It's probably speculative at this point, but his second serve percentage points won are a little bit down. That said, he looked good in both those matches, a lot better than we've seen him look at the end of the season. He has lost 6 out of 7 matches. This is like unheard of for Rafa, but he is looking better. I don't really know what to make of it or what to make of his chances coming up for this title defense in Australia.
It's really tough to say because it's a small sample size, and yeah, he's lost. I mean, no doubt about it. But like you said, he fought in those matches. He didn't go away in those matches. He wasn't blown out. And I think a lot of it does stem from the serve, as you said. He's got to try to find a way to connect and just get the serve percentage higher and stretch the box a little bit, because when he does that, then he can get control of the point with the forehand from the first shot after the serve. But you got to be making the first serve, you know, and you got to have confidence with that. And that's what I thought a key for him last year when he won the title in the big spots. He was making the first serve consistently, and also he had the confidence to come forward. So to me, it's a confidence issue, but also that he just hasn't played as much as the other guys. So you hope that he'll be able to find, you sort of regain the rhythm when he gets going best out of five. So the issue is he's never successfully defended a Grand Slam on a hard court. So, I mean, this is uncharted territory. He's never done it. Now you're asking him to do it at 36 with the guy that's breathing down his back, coming back, wanting to equal the Grand Slam record, and then not to mention Medvedev and Tsitsipas and Felix and all these other young guys coming for him. So it's really going to be a challenge, one of his biggest challenges. I really don't know. I can't give you a sense. I just think it's too small a sample size to really predict what's going to happen. But, you know, if he can get to the second week, that's where all the magic can happen. It's just, how's he going to get there and what kind of condition is he going to be in? And look, abdominal's a serious injury. I know he's, you know, I know it's been a while and all that, but that's a tricky thing, especially on the serve, because you're really exposed. So let's just hope for the best. It's just hard for me to say. It's hard for me to speculate just based on what I saw. He lost to two really quality players. Demonor had a great Davis Cup. We've seen what Nori can do, especially on hard courts. But, you know, Rafa's Rafa. I expect for him to fight his way through. And I just remember what he said at the end of last year: I'm going to die fighting for it. You know he's. You know he's going to go all in intensity, effort-wise, emotionally. Yep. You know, it's not his, you know, it's just a lot at stake. So let's just see what happens.
Yeah, I think he knows he can take a break after this. So, you know, expect him to push through. Let's just, if he's fit and he's got, you know, 10, 15 days right now to prepare, I think he'll be in good shape to get through the first week. And if he feels great, anything can happen. So, I mean, definitely a lot of hope that he can start performing better. This is, he's not going to be losing 6 out of his next 7 matches would be my
statement
right there.
Yeah, and you make a great point about looking ahead. Those guys are so good on focus. The same thing with Novak. If he can't play Indian Wells in Miami, as it looks like today, he wouldn't be able to play. To me, it gives them even more motivation, more incentive. Like, hey, I have a month off after that to really go all in right now. So it makes it almost, the urgency is almost even ratcheted up even more for me.
Richard, what did you think of the United Cup now that it's done and dusted and Team USA is crowned champions of the inaugural event?
I liked it a lot. I liked what I saw. I felt like the second singles weren't always the best matchups, but
Absolutely. Gosh,
Pegula against Iga. I mean, Pegula played incredible. I mean, she just played lights out. The Berrettini Fritz, Berrettini Tsitsipas. There's a lot of really exciting matchups, and the Americans just played. They played phenomenal. They looked so calm. Fritz really did a great job. So did Big Foe, but to me, Pegula really stood out what she did. It was exciting. I was happy to see it. I think I like that they try to sort of fuse Hopman Cup and the ATP Cup. I think the difference with Hopman Cup, you had the one site in Perth, and you also had the best of the best. You just had the best man, the best woman, so every match was... I just felt like some of the matches maybe weren't to the level, but when you got them to the high quality level, they were great, and the fans were great, and it was great to see Ken Rosewall there too. So I mean, it's a lot of good. I felt the crowds were good. I didn't see every match. The matches I saw, I felt the crowds were good.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, there may be some ironing out to be done. I think it's definitely better than the ATP Cup, which was also good. Hey, the team events are fun, and I enjoy them. I think with the ATP Cup and the Davis Cup, it was just a bit much. This is something different. I felt that the players really enjoyed it, seemed to vibe off it, seemed to like to start their season with the camaraderie, a little bit more of a relaxed atmosphere, though, like some, including Matteo Berrettini, seemed to harp on the fact that it was stressful watching teammates. But they fused together. There were a lot of good matches. You're right about the number two singles. Sometimes there were mismatches. Like, for instance, you know, Tiafoe was just too good of a number two singles for most everybody he faced. He finally got to face Musetti, and we were so excited about that. But unfortunately, Musetti was down with a shoulder injury. But overall, a really cool event, and I like to see the men and the women, you know, vibing off each other, growing together, learning from each other. Maria Sakkari talked about how effective it was for her, or how important it was for her to be able to watch Stefano Tsitsipas close up and be inspired by the men. The men were inspired by the women. It was a cool vibe all around. But I think, yeah, they make some changes, maybe keep it at one venue, because I think, you know, it was tough for Poland to have to travel from, I think it was Brisbane up to Sydney, where the courts are a little faster, and while Team USA has taken a travel day off in Sydney, so that created a little bit of a competitive advantage for the team who's got to play it in Sydney. But overall, it was great. You mentioned Pegula beating Iga. That was a massive win for her, given that she lost all four against Iga. I mean, she really looked like the world number three at this tournament. She was the de facto leader of Team USA in every way, and then she showed it on the court, which means, you know, I mean, you're thinking Jessica Pegula at number three. I mean, that's probably as good as it can get, but maybe it can get even better for her.
Well, if she plays the way she played that match, she could win a Grand Slam. There's no question. I mean, she was calling the shots in that match, and she was ripping it down the lines off both wings, and also having David Witt there as a cat. She just seemed like so cool and so confident and so clear on what she wanted to do, and then she just did it. I mean, it was... Yeah, I thought it was one of her best performances. This is someone, remember, boy, look what she did in Madrid last year. Look what she did at some of them. I mean, she's a dangerous player, and American women have a history of coming up big down under. Obviously, Danielle Collins last year, and then Sophia Kennan actually winning the tournament. You've seen American Coco Vandeweghe in the past has gone deep there, Venus and Serena in 2017. So, hey, maybe Pegula or Coco or Madison Keys, or, you know, you just don't know, but the Americans have got to be feeling good about where they are at right now heading into Melbourne.
Yeah, they're almost to a man and to a woman, Americans are looking great. Coco Gauff was in Auckland. I think she lost 22 games in 5 matches, claiming her third career title there, which is a great way to start the season. I'll be honest, I didn't watch the full matches of hers, but I mean, what a great way to start. She's now one of, I think, 5 or 6 American women in the last 40 years to have 3 or more titles under her belt before turning 19. Could be another big year for Coco.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, and especially to do it on a hard court where she hadn't won a title in a few years, or, you know, more of her winning was on clay, although she's been really obviously very competitive on hard court. I thought, you know, she did really well attacking, like moving in when she got the ball, the short ball, especially behind the backhand. She volleyed beautifully a lot of the matches. And I thought one of the things she did that was really smart on the forehand was when they try to just go forehand to forehand, cross court, a right-hander, she was taking a heavy spin, the top spin forehand, down the line to the opponent's backhand, making her go back, backhand to backhand. And then once she gets it on the backhand side, boy, she can do almost anything with a back. She can really pummel it. She can slice it. She can hit it out of the air. And I was impressed that she went after it in these matches. She really took to the net. She used her speed as a weapon, moving forward, making you try to pass. She made some nice touch volleys. Her overhead is really, really strong. And I hope she continues doing that, because to me, when you get her against Iga, you've seen that's a bad matchup, especially when they get forehand to forehand. Now if she can mix up that pattern, get the high ball to your backhand, make you come back to her backhand, and also pressure you with her speed forward and her volley, I mean, that's what you want to see. She has variety. You want to see her use it, and she definitely used it. You know, the one thing you could say, maybe the opponents, the depth of the competition wasn't what she would have seen in United Cup, let's say. But she did beat Kennan. I mean, she did beat some good players. Zhu, you know, I was impressed. I thought she did a good job, and she played with variety.
Yeah, and you can only beat who's in front of you. Let's face it, right? I mean, what can you do about that? It's nice to be able to finish a week no matter what draw you're in with a title. I mean, it's not
also that the fact that last year she lost so many matches in a row at the end. She was just burnt. She was fried in Texas at the finals. But you know, you remember that it lingers. Like, geez, I lost the last five matches. You want to come out and make a statement, and she did exactly what she needed to do.
Yeah, I mean, like, look at the score lines, 6-4, 6-1 over Tatiana Maria, 4-4 over Kennan, 3-2 over Lin Zhu, 11-2 over Kovanec in the semis, and 1-1 over Masarova in the finals, so taking care of
it. Yeah, she destroyed her in the finals. And the other thing that was cool to see about it was, like you said, some of those matches she had to go indoors where there was no crowd, basically. And when you saw her in front of the crowd, you saw her just really lift and brighten up, and that's a cool thing to see, that someone actually plays better before the I mean, everybody always says, oh, we love the fans, but some people don't play better in front of big crowds, enthusiastic crowds. She does, or at least she did this week. So that was great to see also, because she's going to be playing in front of some big crowds at the AO, and she has that personality where she really welcomes the fans in.
Yeah. Richard, question for you. As we circle back to United Cup, what did you think of Iga Świątek getting just four games against Pegula? Just one of those things where it was perfect conditions for Pegula with the fast surface. Did it open your eyes to think that maybe Iga is vulnerable specifically on the hard courts going into this slam?
Well, it made me feel like she's more vulnerable than I would have thought, you know, coming out of last year, even though she didn't win the WTA finals. It made me feel like she's more of a, I still feel like she's the favorite, but I feel like it opens up the eyes of other players. Like, look, you can get to her. And also, you know, emotionally, she was a little bit fragile in that match, which you could understand. It was a tough, I mean, Pegula beat her down at times. I mean, no doubt about it. She definitely beat her. So that was the other thing that was kind of eye-opening. You know, she's been working with a sports psychologist for years and all that, but she was definitely emotional. I mean, so I think, you know, if you're an opponent, you got to say, look, she's had a phenomenal winning streak. She dominated the sport last year, but you've seen signs that, hey, she's human too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you make her defend, you make her play from behind, maybe it's a different ball game. Mm-hmm. I'd still say she's a favorite, though, for me. I don't see how you can see what you saw her do last year and then sort of, not write it off, but sort of minimize her after one, you know, after United. I don't think it dispels all the good work she did last year. So she's still the favorite for me, but I definitely think it's more of an open conversation.
21 years old. I mean, especially what she was able to do at the U.S. Open last year, where we knew she wasn't really perfectly suited for those conditions for that, for winning a hardcourt slam, and yet she found a way to finagle her way through that slam. She wasn't her most dominant self. It wasn't like one of her Roland Garros runs, but that was the one.
Absolutely,
really,
and I got to be honest, that match I felt going in, it was 50-50, but I gave Hans a little bit of an edge going in. So, yeah, absolutely, she won without being at her best.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be fun in Australia. I think you mentioned Ons, who's going to be tough, and Caroline Garcia is still in the mix, and Aryna Sabalenka wins her 11th title in Adelaide, coming in with some confidence now after making the WTA finals title match last year and now starting the season very strong. She could be a factor. I mean, we know how good she can be when she doesn't get in her way, right?
Yeah, exactly. And a great thing about those matches at the end, to see her smile and see her high, and you didn't feel like the weight of the world was on her shoulders. You didn't see her hit 40 double faults. She just seemed like at peace with, you know, this is what I got to do. And boy, some of those matches were tie breaks, and she pulled them out. And the final opponent was a tough, tough opponent, and she served well. She did exactly what you want to see her do, and look, she's been in the Wimbledon semifinals. She's gone deep at the U.S. Open. She can definitely, definitely do damage if she can just keep it together mentally and let the shots flow and just don't overthink it. And don't beat yourself up when you double fault. You have a big game, you're going to double fault.
Yeah,
you know?
I think
just,
she knows that by now.
Yeah, she knows it by now. It's just, you know, you want to see her... You want to see her in the second week. I want to see her in the second week because she's so explosive, and she gives you great contrast to someone like Ons or Coke. It's just a different style, so you like to see that. And look, let's not forget at Wimbledon what Rybakina did last year. Some of these big hitters, you get them in the right conditions, they can just totally disarm you, take the racket out of your hands, and she can certainly do that to just about anybody. I'd say the same thing, even though she's not playing at that level, is someone like Keys. You know, I mean, people still sort of don't give her credit, but when she's on, she's another one that can really take you out of the match.
Yeah.
Sabalenka played really, she played great. It was great to see that.
Mm-hmm. Keys back in the top 10, played well as number two singles in United Cup. A lot of names on the WTA side. You know, you look at the men and you immediately think this is Novak's tournament to win. It's hard to see anybody but maybe Novak, Rafa, or Medvedev winning. With the women, you think that about Iga, which you already mentioned. You already alluded to the fact that she's probably the heavy favorite. But you know, haven't even mentioned Petra Kvitova is starting to play well, undefeated so far in the season. There's Hadad Maia, there's Samsonova, a lot of good players, Kudermetova, Maria Sakkari, you never know. She likes to play down in Australia. She's been hit or miss for a bit. But there are a lot of good players on the women's side that we can...
Garcia is a dangerous player, you know, when she has a serve going, very dangerous.
Yeah. So I think my takeaway is that it's a little bit more contestable for the women's side. You know, I think, yeah, I feel like Iga should and could win it, but you just never know. There's a lot of great players, and it's going to be a very interesting, you know, second, third, and fourth round on the women's side for sure. I mean, what else?
And especially with Barty not there, you don't have to worry about, like, I'm going to fight the whole crowd if I play Barty in the semis or the final. I got 20,000 people against. You don't have to deal with that, you know. Yeah. Now it's just you gotta deal with the players that are there.
Well, Barty will be there in spirit and in person, actually, which is pretty interesting that we heard that she's going to do a little bit of mentoring.
Yeah.
So she's around. It was nice to see a picture with her and Iga Świątek. And she's going to be a mentor to Olivia Gadecki, who's a wild card.
Yeah, it's nice to see her back, and she seems really really happy, too, with her life.
Yeah. I didn't, and she's pregnant, right?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
Didn't expect her to be back at the Aussie Open so soon. I think that's a really good sign. I don't know if it means comeback, but it means she's going to be a part of the fabric of Aussie tennis and a presence, which is awesome.
Yeah, that is. And she's someone who really honored the tradition and history.
Oh,
you know,
goodness.
Her ties with Yvonne Goolagan, she's just really, really respects the tradition. It's nice to see her pay it forward.
Yeah, so cool. Some faces will be missing at this Australian Open. World number one Carlos Alcaraz out with injury. Naomi Osaka has withdrawn. Venus Williams had a wild card. She got injured, is not going to play. Any thoughts on any of those and how that'll impact the draw?
Well, I mean, I'm not really surprised with Naomi just because she hasn't played since September and she just, you know, hadn't entered any of the tune-ups, and it just seems like she's consciously chosen to take a sabbatical. I don't know why, if it's mental health related or just she needs time away. So it didn't surprise me that she didn't play. I was really hoping to see Venus, you know, one more time there. I know the crowd really wanted to see her, and I felt she, you know, to get her first win in Auckland, things were kind of going in the right direction, and it's a shame because you don't know if you'll ever see her play down on, she's 42 years old. You don't know if you'll ever see her play there again, and she had so many great moments there. So I feel bad about that, and obviously Alcaraz is the big one. I mean, he's the one you want to see go against Novak, Rafa, Medvedev, Tsitsipas, any of those guys, and anybody who saw what he did at the U.S. Open, especially that center match or the big foe match. I mean, he's just an electrifying player. He's so exciting. I think the fans would have loved to see that. It's a bummer, but, you know, he has a great coach and a great team around him, and if they're telling, and it goes back to a hamstring with him too, and you don't want to mess with that. It's a big muscle. That's a really, his speed is one of his major assets. So it's probably, I'm not a doctor, but to me it sounds like they made the really smart call there. You don't want to impair him, you know, in the first month of the season, and then he's dealing. I mean, a hamstring is a big muscle. You don't want to mess with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it sucks. I mean, it sucks to lose him. He's electrifying, but you know, you move forward. But you want to see him go against those guys, especially after the Rafa match in Indian Wells that he beat Novak in Madrid. I mean, you want to see him go against those guys in the majors.
Yep, that's what you want to see. And, you know, this was going to be his last appearance as a teenager at the Slams. He'll turn 20 on May 5th, I think.
Right.
Thankfully, we've got Holger Rune.
Right, we got Holger Rune, yeah. And we still got, hey, look, Sinner and Musetti are still pretty young. Felix is super young. I mean, Felix is, what, 22 now? Felix can do damage, I think. He beat Novak at Laver Cup, I realize, it's 2 out of 3, but Felix has been really coming on the last year.
Yeah, for sure. Expecting a big year from him. Potential trip to a Grand Slam final or something to that effect. What do you think about? I got a couple questions about players that I want to get your take on their upside for this season and beyond. Cam Nori, incredible performance at United Cup, beating Rafa, which is a huge one for him to get over that hump. But then beating Fritz also and Demonor and just looking so professional, so strong, so unflappable in every phase of his game.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's funny, when we talk about fitness for years, you'd always talk about Rafa, Novak, and Murray. And now I think you got to talk about Cameron Norrie as one of the fittest guys around. I mean, this guy, I mean, he sweats and sweats and sweats, and he looks like he just wants more. He just goes more. And also, he's just so awkward stylistically to play, where you think you should be getting some mid-court balls from the forehand. Sometimes it looks a little loopy, like, oh, he's going to land it short, I'm going to tee off. And he's just so precise with the ball. It reminds me, even though he's a totally different player, his ball control reminds me a little bit of David Ferrer, that he can just incrementally put the ball closer and closer and closer to the lines, and you don't see him miss on big points. Even though his backhand is so flat, you're sitting there thinking, God, he's going to put a backhand in the net. He just doesn't on the big point. He's a tough, tough guy. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want any part of that guy on any survey. First guy, I mean, he's just, and he gets off on those grinding, sweaty, long, physical, like, he likes that. He gets off on that. So, yeah, he's tough. I mean, I wouldn't want any part of that guy.
I feel like there are bigger things to come for him. Like, but I know he's very unassuming when you look at him. You don't see, like, this is one of the best athletes in the world. But I feel like he is so driven and so steady right now that he could possibly sneak through, win a slam type of thing. I don't know. I just really was impressed by the way he played United Cup. Francis is...
If you went out to a practice court and you watch him play against Draper, you would say Draper's the guy. And Draper, yes, I think, is going to be a really, really good player. But if you didn't... You know, if you didn't know any of their history, you'd be like, wow, that kid Draper. But Nori's just a winner. He just wins. He competes hard. And he, like you said, he doesn't physically blow you away when you look at him. But, boy, he's just so tough. Yeah. And he doesn't miss on the big – that really gets into your head. You're thinking, this guy isn't going to miss.
He's amazing. 27, he's got some gray hair coming out. I mean, he's unreal. But, you know, I look up the – up and down the top 25 for the men's, and it's exciting. There's, you know, you see Zverev coming back. I think it's going to be tough for him, but you've got Holger Rune, you've got Taylor Fritz. Francis is at 17, looking like he's headed for the top 10. Berrettini's at 14, but you know he can be much higher. You know he's dangerous at slams. Medvedev's at 8. Musetti, who's so exciting and so thrilling to watch and so aesthetically pleasing to watch, at number 19. Nick Kyrgios at 21. Shapovalov, you know, can be a force if he turns his game on and finds that switch and that extra gear. He's at 22. Borna Coric is at 23 in the rankings. Tsitsipas at 4 looked great at United Cup too, and you know he still believes he can win a slam. I mean, there's a lot of good players in there. I don't think I mentioned Andre Rublev, Felix, Hubert Hurkacz is an incredible talent that could. He's not as consistent as I'd like him to be, but I feel like he's another guy that could break through and get to a slam final type of thing this season.
Yeah, those are all good, great names to mention, because a lot of the younger guys, too, are shot makers, where they're not afraid, like a Musetti or a Holger Rune. These guys aren't afraid. A Sinner, you know, they're not afraid to go for the shot. Rublev, obviously, aggressive baseliner. So that makes it really you know, exciting also. And to me, Berrettini is a guy, like, you don't want to sleep on that guy. He's been in the Wimbledon final. He's been in the U.S. Open semifinal. Like you said, when the serve is cranking, you don't really get much of a sniff on his service games. And I thought the slice looked pretty good. Even the Fritz loss that he had, I mean, he had some really sharp, low slices. And when you're trying to dig that slice out, and then the next ball, he can run around and jam that forehand anywhere in the court, you know, good luck with that. That's a, it's a very disorientating opponent, and he's just so physically powerful, too.
Yeah, and when you say, like, you know, in the past, if we'd say Berrettini lost to Fritz, you'd say, like, what's up with Berrettini? Like, but Fritz has become a serious, serious player on tour right now.
I mean, I love hearing Fritz's post-match because he's very analytical, but he goes both ways. He'll tell you what he did right, what he did wrong, and that tells me he really thinks about his game and the opponent's game and where they fit. He's a very smart guy in terms of analyzing his game, and he's, boy, he's hitting the ball so clean off both sides, and his serve is much bigger than people think because you see guys get a racket on it, or, but when he wants to bring the heat, he's got a big-time serve, too.
6'5". He's a big kid, and he's got a lot, got a lot of power, and I think he's great on in the clutch and under pressure. I've been watching him the last couple of years. You know, when you get and see him in tight spots, he doesn't waver. He's doing a great job right now, and I feel like top five is definitely in his future. It's crazy to say that American man can be up that high, and I think Francis is vibing off that, and I think he's going to go higher, and I think Sebi's going to trail these guys. Like, the whole American men's tennis theme is still in play, and I still think they're all going to have some pretty decent years, though I don't really know what's up with Riley Opelka at the moment, but, you know, he's got to get healthy. But overall, very good vibes from, you know, you go into a slam and you don't really hear the name Taylor Fritz thinking, you know, this is a guy that can be in the semis or even deeper, but it's starting to feel like that could be a reality.
Yeah, especially with the Indian Wells win and then the Wimbledon performance against Rafa where he could have won that match. He feels like, you know, like, he belongs, like, he can beat these guys, and he can. I mean, he can. It's just now the next step is to do it in a slam. And I think the great thing for fans of American tennis is also the depth below those names you mentioned, where you have a Nakashima, Tommy Paul, Jensen Brooksby, some of these guys that are just really, really good players, especially on hard court. So it's those guys trending toward the top 10, and Fritz obviously in the top 10, but also the depth of the guys coming up, so it's great. I mean, you could see that a little bit on that women's side. Alicia Parks is another one coming, so there's a lot of Katie McNally, people like that. So there's a lot of depth, too, in addition to the stars sort of congregating near the top 10.
Yeah, and yet last year was a big formative year for Fritz because it was third round and out for him at so many slams, I think 8 or so, but prior to last year, and he finally cracked the duck at the Aussie Open, where he got to the round of 16, went 5 sets with Tsitsipas, nearly won that match, and then of course, Wimbledon getting to the quarters, losing to Rafa in a fifth set breaker.
And he said something to Courier at United Cup, the on-court interview, where they basically, what was it different? And he talked a lot about his footwork, and I thought that was a very prescient comment because you don't see him just, like, lunging for the forehand or hitting the squash shot forehand. He gets his feet set. He turns his hips, his shoulders. He really gets his body behind the ball. And when he can do that and set his feet, I mean, he hits the ball beautifully, both wings. He doesn't have a weaker side. And he's really, I feel like you've seen him since the beginning. You've seen him really develop the forehand as a weapon that he can end the point now with the forehand. His backhand has always been, you know, world-class shot. So yeah, he's got a huge upside, and he's got the desire. Look, we saw that, remember when he got wheeled off at Roland Garros and everyone's like, oh my god, this guy's gonna be out for months. He came back at Wimbledon a couple years ago after that, so he showed you how much he wants to play, how much it means to him, and that good quality to have.
And the Indian Wells final last year, where everybody told him to not play that match, and he ends up, you know, taking the title from Rafa in one of his most memorable matches of his career. So I mean, it shows this guy's kind of he's on a different wavelength. So that's always nice, right? So I guess good stuff. I don't know. Did we cover every? I think we're going to try and come back later in the week once we get the draw. So maybe we don't have to worry too much about covering anything else. But parting shots here, Richard, before I let you go for a few days.
It was a great opening week. You saw a lot of the stars. You saw the young players. We talked about Coco Noskova. We talked about a lot of the younger players coming through. So, I'm super pumped and can't wait for the draws. And that's going to tell us a lot of the story of maybe week one.
Well, it sounds like you got to go because the cops are coming for you.
No, he's coming.
you know, to take off. Anything about the Mets for our listeners?
Hey, you know what? It's hard to hit a moving target. Yeah. So,
a lot of our listeners just tune into you because for the Mets talk. So, I mean, the off season, their payroll is now up to what, $6 trillion?
Their payroll is massive. The good thing is they have an owner who can afford it. So I feel like the players should be paid. They're the ones going out there. They're the ones taking the pressure. Good for them.
I guess. So what actually is the Mets' payroll for next season? Is it over?
They're going to be over $300 million, I believe, if they sign Carlos Correa. I mean, they're going to be it's huge. But
gotta love that as a fan.
Just hope they don't raise the parking rates and stuff like that. I mean, I'm still trying to get you to go to a game. You always blow me off.
We'll be there next year. I guarantee it. All right, Richard, thanks. Let's check back later in the week. Enjoy your week. Keep cranking out the good stuff for tennisnow.com and, get out of there because the cops are clearly knocking at you.
Yeah. Okay, Chris, thanks so much.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay, bye.
This edition of the Lucky Letcord podcast is a wrap. Special thanks to Richard Pagliaro, as always, for joining. You can find his work at tennisnow.com. You can find some of my work there as well. Always worth it to check us out. Sign up for the mailing list. Stay hip to what's going on in the world of tennis. You can also find us on social media at facebook.com/tennisnow, at tennis_now on Twitter. We're always out there. We're always keeping an eye on the sport we love. Next time you see us, it'll be right before the Australian Open when the draws are released. So look forward to an episode coming later this week. And let's get fired up for the Aussie Open. Happy New Year. Happy 2023, everyone. And we will see you next time.